Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Ferment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on iTunes, Stitcher, and right here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It is February 13th, and it is a really, really, really freaking exciting time for me, at least. I've had a crazy day. I've been tearing up floors at the brewery at Fifth Hammer in Long Island City, Queens. This whole thing coming from nothing to something is turning this dream to reality is really exciting. I'm learning a lot of stuff that I never, ever wanted to know about buildings and all the permits that you need to go through, all this hoopla. But I can't wait till this thing opens. And I'm really excited about it. But enough about that. Well, one thing exciting about this is that once we get these floors in, it means I can get the equipment in. I can actually put the brew house and the fermenters that have been waiting for me in Nebraska, I can get them here to New York City. And they are actually going to arrive during New York City Beer Week. So it's a special beer week this year. It starts on February 24th. And goes till March 5th. And for me, it will be incredibly significant. But there's a lot of really fun stuff happening. If you go to New York City Beer Week or NYCBeerWeek.com, you can find out more information about the different events that are happening. Among them, we're putting on the New York's first annual, hopefully, New York City Fermentation Festival, which will be held at the Brooklyn Expo Center. You could also go to nycfermentationfestival.com to find out information about that. There's going to be lots of seminars. It's going to be a full day, all ages family affair with 30 producers of fermented good stuff, 15 pro brewers, 45 home brews from representing 10 different of New York City clubs or regional clubs, bunch of seminars, including some taught by our next guest, both next week's, today's, and last week's, and we're really, really freaking excited about it. Also, coming up at the end of March, the New York National Homebrew Competition, we're judging at Kings County Brewers Collective. If you go to the American Homebrewers Association or go to brew competition. Oof, I should know this because I'm organizing it. But I always forget this specific website. But we need your palettes. If you are a BJCP registered certified judge, sign up for that. We could use your help. And if you want to know how a homebrew competition is run, we can certainly use your help stewarding and facilitating the operation. Are there any other? Oh, yes. Also, before that actually happens, on the week prior to that, on March 18th, Josh Bernstein and I are throwing a festival with 15 pro brewers, 10 home brewers, and a bunch of sausage around the corner here at Arrogant Swine. If you go to joshuambernstein.com, you can find out more information about that. We'd love to have you. It's sausages and beers all afternoon, 1 to 4, for $45, and it's a grand old time. And I think that's all I have to say about that.
Great. It is, in fact, Brewers Competition, brewingcompetition.com.
Thank you. It is brewingcompetition.com.
Yes.
Yes, Winter's Grind number 3. It's our third year doing the other thing, for flipping back between flings, yes. Mm-hmm. Mary, you have anything to say?
No, sorry. I just had an important work text come in, so I'm going to finish that. Continue on. I'll join in a minute.
One thing about the Fermentation Festival, which we're extremely excited about, I just found out that there's a Groupon for all of you thrifty Brooklynites.
Yeah.
There is a Groupon for the New York City Homebrew Festival. So please come
for
to the festival.
For the New York City Fermentation
Festival. I'm sorry, for the New York City Fermentation Festival.
Yes, and that'll last only a couple of days.
So you better get on it now.
Get on it now or pay full price after. Today's guest, we have Michael Schwartz of Bow Food and Drink, and you are doing a seminar for the festival. We are familiar with the product. You've been preaching the gospel of fermented foods here locally and abroad. Who are you? How'd you get into fermentation?
Huh. Well,
all of this stuff.
Well, we started Bow in 2009. I have a restaurant background, so we started off, you know, the idea was to make a healthy product, something we really wanted to make an alternative to soda, right, for our kids. Right? We had really young kids, and we wanted to make something healthy. So we started to make kombucha. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up with this huge space in Long Island City, not far from where your brewery is going to be, and decided to branch out and create some other products. And then we launched into some fermented vegetables and sauces and ended up with close to 30 different varieties of fermented products.
That's amazing.
By we, you mean you and your other founder, also named Mike?
Right. The other Mike. Right.
Well, what's his background?
He has a business background, and we were fraternity brothers in college, and he badgered me to start a food business. You know, he had the financial brains, and I had the know-how, and it was a perfect match. And then he decided to go on his merry way. So he's still in food, and he's a great guy, and we get together all the time. We get our kids together. Mm-hmm. But he's not involved in the day-to-day Bow operations anymore.
So what is your restaurant background prior to this?
So I worked in a number of restaurants mm-hmm. since I was a teenager. I worked in restaurants through college, went to culinary school. I taught at the Institute of Culinary Education for 12 years. And so I was relatively familiar with fermented foods. You know, we always made sauerkraut or kimchi or things, you know, a variety of fermented things in the restaurants where I was working. And so it just naturally led into the ability to make it on a larger scale. However, we used to make like 3 or 4 gallons of right. sauerkraut at a time. And now we make like a ton.
A metric ton.
2,000 pounds at a time. So.
Yep, for a lot of, I asked that because, you know, a lot of people, all of a sudden, this fermentation thing has become a business, but a lot of people are scared to start fermenting in the first place.
Yeah, but there's no reason to be. I mean, fermentation is the oldest and safest method of preservation that humans have. I mean, we've been doing it for thousands and thousands of years, and it is unbelievably safe. There are no documented cases of foodborne illnesses coming from fermented food. So because of the way that it grows, lactobacillus is a salt-loving or briny-loving bacteria, and most pathogens do not like salt, and they do not like acid, and lactobacillus creates acid. So it's a very, very safe product, and everybody should make it at home. And there are a bunch of recipes on our website. If you don't know where to start, you can go to Bow Food and Drink and open up our pickle recipe. It's super easy. I make it with my kids, my son's Cub Scout troop.
Oh, yeah?
Every day, yeah. Gabriel, he's made them twice, and he loves to make them. It's great. It's great fun for the kids. And
when the kids are doing it, do you talk a lot about what's going on there microbially or what's happening with the battle is between bacteria?
Yeah, so we do. I have a bunch of slides that I've put together of good bacteria and bad bacteria, and we talk about how they're, you know, you're covered with bacteria, the table's covered, everything's covered with bacteria. It's part of our environment. And, you know, the majority of bacteria are benign or beneficial. There are very, very few that are pathogenic. And so, you know, we talk about how for pathogenic bacteria, you need to do certain things, and you have to wash your hands, and you have to be clean. But then there are other ones that you want to encourage, and they're great for your digestive system. And, you know, Gabriel is a huge kombucha drinker. He's my 7-year-old. He's awesome. And my little guy, Harry, he's 2, and he drinks a little kombucha. And it's great for them, and they love it.
Gabriel is 7, and Bao is about 7, right?
That's right.
And so so you were, instead of milk, you wanted to make kombucha for your kid?
That's right. Instead of soda.
Instead of soda. Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
Was he drinking soda at
nope.
0 years old?
No.
That's my question.
No, he had no soda, so he went right. Okay. He went right from milk to kombucha.
To kombucha.
Yeah.
How did he like, did he have a taste for that kind of tart sour thing?
Right. I mean, it's interesting. Young kids like sour. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, it's not uncommon. They'll just pick up a lemon and suck on a lemon. They like that flavor. And I mean, I think it's part of the human background. You know, you just by nature, you know that it's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very easy to convert them into that kind of product.
I want to know what making pickles with a Cub Scout pack looks like.
Oh my God. I have pictures. It is fun and chaotic and... I mean, we had them at the organic food incubator. We had some tables set out. I have these safety knives, serrated safety knives that are really great for kids, and they just go to town. You know, we talk a little bit about the rules, and they wash their hands, and they cut up their pickles any size they want, put them in, bring them. I give them jars, and they have a great time.
So you bring, because actually this is something, we have a lot of people who listen, who have kids and mm-hmm. also yeah. who are interested in teaching kids. I worked at Boy Scout camp for 4 summers when I was younger. So I did a lot of, I taught, you know, Boy Scout merit badges. So I've worked with groups.
Right.
So you provide the cucumbers and then yep. the jars, and then do you make the brine ahead of time?
So, yeah. So what I do is I make a brine, right? Just salt water. And we use a very specific ratio. So for all of the Bao products... all of these solids, we use 0.4 ounces of salt per pound of solids.
Okay.
Right? That's our rule. For the pickles are the only ones that are different because you need a lot more liquid. We use, I'm going to get it wrong now. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's on the website, so you can download it from the website. And so I make the brine, and really important to cut the ends off the pickles because there's a enzyme in the blossom end that makes your pickle soggy. So you get rid of that.
Right.
Yeah. So we trim those off for them, and then they make spears or cut, you know, circles or whatever they want. We give them a jar and they throw in a little garlic, and we give them some dill, peppercorns. They can put whatever they want in there. And then I just go around and pour the brine on top. And I made some airlocks, really simple airlocks. Take these kind of lids and put a hole in it, regular beer mm-hmm. airlock right in there. They take them home, and a couple days later, they have pickles.
Awesome.
It's great, yeah.
Wow.
Really cool, really fun.
So you started making basically pickles in Long Island City and kombucha in Long Island City, and then you started this company called Bao. So what does Bao mean?
So,
figuratively and literally.
So Mike and I, right, we were fraternity brothers in college. We both rode motorcycles. We liked, at the time, we were in shape. We liked to lift weights.
You're doing great.
Right? And so we wanted to have, we noticed that there were, you know, most of the organic products out there were geared towards women, and they're kind of flowery and beautiful labels, and we wanted a guy's product, right? So we decided we were going to start Badass Organics, right? And that's what BAO stands for, Badass Organics. And so what we learned was that men don't buy stuff. Women buy the stuff. So we had to kind of retweak. We redesigned our logo. We made it a little bit more gentle.
But you still have the name Bao.
But we still have, so right. And so now we go with Bao.
Everybody can get behind Bao.
Right.
Yeah. So, or Bao, though.
But well, you know, now, I mean, 7 years ago.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah. I mean, fermented food is kind of a strong flavor, right? So you do have to be a little bit of a badass, and you have to commit some time to eating healthy and doing that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you have to be a badass to be healthy.
Absolutely. We're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Okay. Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds, delicious fresh cheese curds, or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirsois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Welcome back to episode 193 of Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Michael Schwartz of Badass Organics, or BAO Food and Drink. And you have brought this array of the diverse that just shows the diversity of your products. How many different products are you dealing with right now?
I lose count.
Or style products. Let's start with the umbrellas.
So we have four categories, right? So we start off with kombucha. We have 14 flavors of kombucha, 10 of them in the bottle, 4 different flavors in the keg.
Okay. So you do keg kombucha.
We do keg kombucha, right. I'm sure you know Kombucha Brooklyn.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So a few years ago, you know, Eric and I have become friends over the years. We've been in the same field, and he wanted to move upstate and wanted to get out of the liquid business. So we kind of merged BAO and Kombucha Brooklyn's keg program.
Uh-huh.
So we took that over for him. So we do bottles and kegs of kombucha. We do 7 varieties of cultured vegetables. 6 sauces. So we have 4 flavors of hot sauce, a cultured ketchup, and a cultured barbecue sauce. The only ketchup and barbecue sauce, I'm pretty sure, on the market.
That are fermented.
Oh. And then we have these little energy shots.
And when you say market, how far is that market spread?
I don't think anybody.
I think anybody. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Do you think that's a stability thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's an odd product. So the market for it is really small. It requires a tremendous amount of customer education. Yeah, you have to be a badass.
Yeah.
And you have to have, you have to do a lot of customer education, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a very small population that wants fermented ketchup, right?
That's so interesting because it has vinegar in it already.
Right, but it has a lot of sugar in it. And so none of the products on the table here have any sugar, right?
Right.
So sugar is not in our flavor. For the kombucha, yeah. But for everything else, for the vegetables, the sauces, and the shots, the flavor profile is tart and briny.
We didn't get to the shots.
We didn't get to the shots.
Please tell me about those. I'm so curious.
Right. So what happened was we started to make all of this kimchi and sauerkraut, and we had all this liquid left over. And I mean, it was gallons and gallons of fermentation liquid, and we would drink it. Like, in the office, we'd be like, oh, this is really good, and we drink. So then we're like, well, we have to do something with it. We can't drink it all.
Right.
So we put a little green tea in there, and we made one. We added spirulina and chlorella to one, and we added ginger and hibiscus to another one, and we made these 2 little fermented energy shots. So they have tremendous amount of lactobacillus, great for your digestion. They have a little green tea, good for energy. They have tons of lactic acid from the fermentation, which is great for, depending on your activity level, great for a hangover or great after a workout, because it really helps with muscle fatigue.
Yeah.
And then they were so popular that we made 2 more flavors. So then we made a turmeric and dandelion root and we call it deep purple. So it's got elderberry, licorice, and nigella seed, which is an Indian black seed. It's really, really powerful antioxidant.
It's called nigella?
Nigella seed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or black onion seed, people call it.
Okay.
So then we had 4, and then we just launched 2 more. We started to make beets, so we had the beet juice, so we made one with beets, and we made one with our spicy kimchi liquid, so we have a hot one. So we have hot, beets, ginger, deep purple, green, and turmeric.
That's
pretty
and
awesome.
Ginger.
And there's a certain amount of sediment in these, and mm-hmm. you recommend shaking them
oh,
up
yeah.
and taking
shake
the whole
them
thing.
Up, shake that. Them up, you drink the whole thing.
That's a good stuff.
It's great as a mixer for if you want to do picklebacks. It makes a really interesting pickleback. But they're also really good for, you know, after a workout, or they're great for your digestion, and they're nice.
So borderline corporate espionage going on right here. Stability of kombucha in kegs, and what did you learn going to kombucha into kegs? And is there a trick to it? Because also for bringing kegs of kombucha to homebrew parties or whatever, is there any tips or recommendations?
Well, so for the kegs, we for industrial kombucha, almost always, right? You have to force carbonate, kind of like beer,
right?
It's a little trade secret. You can't legally bottle carbonate, because bottle carbonation results in higher alcohol.
Right.
And for most of the kombucha brewers, with the exception of Kombrucha or GT's high alcohol one, you have to keep that alcohol level low. So we do...
And contained. Right. Completely, yeah.
So we stay refrigerated. We over-ferment a little bit, so you get more acetobacter growth, which destroys the alcohol. And then we force carbonate with CO2.
Well, that's my question.
And then it stays refrigerated, and they have a short shelf life. So, you know, without fruit juice, 6 months. With fruit juice, 3 or 4 months.
Uh-huh.
No, in scaling up and making kombucha from, like, going home, from, like, making it at home to, like, making it for mass production, how is there, like, a difference in the SCOBY care? Is there a difference in the actual making of it?
How
do you take care of
SCOBY? I don't know if I really want to drop this bomb, but I have to tell you, I'm not a big proponent of the SCOBY.
So, you know, we just had the scientist from Tufts on and talking about kombucha and making kombucha, and the SCOBY itself is really just that cellulose kind of thing.
Exactly.
The cultures are in the liquid as well.
The cultures are in the liquid.
Yeah.
So we started off in 5-gallon buckets, just like everyone else. Then we progressed to 50-gallon buckets, and then we moved to 500-gallon buckets. And so a SCOBY in a 500-gallon tote takes up, you know, 20 or 30 gallons of possible product. So we take those SCOBYs out and we compost them. We don't really keep them.
So you're just transferring a starter.
The bacteria's in the liquid.
Yeah.
And I know there's this whole lore about the SCOBY, but it's really just the byproduct of the fermentation. And
right.
You don't really need it. And it'll always grow a new one. You can't stop it.
Right.
Yeah. I was just looking forward to, like, a giant SCOBY.
I'm sorry. I could bring you one.
It'll be like, if we dry it out, it can be a big blanket.
It still grows a SCOBY. You just don't reuse it for
right. The yeah, we take them out.
Then did you have to adjust any of your practices when you went from using a SCOBY to using just the starter liquid?
Yeah, so
what we'll call the starter liquid.
So one of the things that happens in large batch fermentation is kombucha really needs oxygen, and CO2 is heavy, right? So you have a big tote, right? This giant tote. It's taller than I am. I'm not. Very,
is it like this? The
I'm
same as
really
like
tall.
The cider totes that?
Yeah. Those,
okay.
You look tall on
like
radio.
The recti- like the recti-
I, yeah.
Everyone's tall on the radio.
Right. So when you have a small amount of product and a wide opening, you can get a little bit of air. But when you have this deep vat of kombucha, it's really oxygen deprived. So we turn the product, which also destroys the SCOBYs if we were to leave them in there. But we'll like aerate it.
Oh.
Right. Almost like a Lauder turn.
Do you,
so
yeah.
we get
do you
bring more oxygen.
Fine wine.
The exact opposite of what you want for your
are you just pumping it back into itself?
Yeah.
Like we're doing a whirlpool? Or
yeah,
are
kind
you
of.
Are you blowing like oxygen through the bottom?
No, we don't we don't blow oxygen in, but yeah, we just push it over air. So
okay.
That brings more air into the product.
Oh, like a lot of time, like a Vorloth, like,
yeah.
like go back in and let it splash into itself?
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
What are we eating right now? This is the...
So that's our sour pickle relish. I should have brought some hot dogs, but...
dang it.
Oh, so good. Okay, Mary and I are vegetarians.
She's flexitarian. She's
Barry's tempeh. It's great with Barry's tempeh.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah. Barry was one of our first guests on the show.
Really? Yeah, he's a good guy.
We're excited about having him back. Have you worked a lot with Barry in the past, too? Was he part of KBI? Or
no, not
no.
KBI.
Organic
food? Was he part of your...
No.
Because he was producing in Long Island as well.
He's
LIC producing, for a
right,
while.
He's producing on the at the entrepreneur space on okay. the other side of Long Island City, but we've crossed paths a lot. Gotcha. He's a nice guy, and his product's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This product is pretty amazing.
Thank you.
What are some of the inspirations for some of these products? Or like, is it just, you know?
Yeah, so the inspiration is kind of like...
Keep, or repeating them, too.
It's kind of like what I want to eat.
Yeah.
This pickle relish was basically, I wanted pickle relish.
This is delicious.
This is really good.
And yeah. one of the... So,
I don't usually like pickle relish. But
the pickles are really hard for us to make because we have organic certification, and organic Kirby cucumbers are in season from June to middle of August, and that's it, right? And so if we don't get enough cucumbers, like we're already out of we're sold out until next spring. No more cucumbers from Bao. But yep. for the pickle relish, we can use any kind of organic cucumber. The problem with making whole pickles is that they get mushy, mm-hmm. right? But the Kirby's don't. But for this pickle relish, we cut them in half. We take out the seeds so they stay a little bit crunchy. And so we can make the pickle relish year-round. We can get organic cucumbers year-round. So,
what is how do you go about making a fermented barbecue sauce?
So what we do with all of our products is we took the German technique and Asian flavors and kind of mixed them together.
So the German technique of kraut?
So German technique of kraut, right? Okay. So the European technique of kraut, mm-hmm. right? So when you make sauerkraut, right, you take the cabbage and you salt it and you press it under the liquid and then you let it go for however long you ferment it and then you chill it and pack it, right? Very easy. For typical Korean kimchi, you salt the cabbage or the vegetables, and then you rinse off the salt, and then you add the flavoring, and then you let it ferment. And so that method requires a tremendous amount more labor.
Yeah.
And the sauerkraut method is much less labor. It's a lot easier. So, you know, I call our sour or our spicy slaw, I call it, you know, it's American kimchi, right? We took all of the techniques and the flavors and we blended them together. So to answer a very long way around to answer your question, the barbecue sauces and our hot sauces, we basically make sauerkraut out of whatever kind of vegetable. So for the ketchup, it's tomatoes. So we take tomatoes, ginger, garlic, a little bit of raisin to get some deep color and some spices, and we salt it and make sauerkraut out of it, and then we blend it together. We just put it in a blender. That's it.
Straight blend it.
Blend it, chill it, put it in the bottle.
Yeah.
The problem was, because the tomatoes have a lot of sugar, the raisins have a lot of sugar, when we first started making it, we were blowing up bottles all over the place. So
you're probably getting some.
Oh yeah,
a lot of CO2
oh,
production.
Yeah, yeah. So the sauces are fermented much longer than any of the vegetables.
Right. What is that turnover rate? You think?
So the vegetables, most of them are about a week, week and a half. We go for pH. So what we're shooting for is like somewhere between 3.2 and 3.5 pH, mm-hmm. right? Which is pretty tart. The beets, we ferment longer because there's a lot of sugar in the beets. And then the sauces were like 3 or 4 weeks. Right? We take them for a really long time to make sure all that sugar's gone.
Yeah.
And we don't explode over somebody's ceiling.
Right. So let's talk about some of your favorite things to do with these fermented products.
So that's like one of the biggest questions we get,
yep.
right? Is what do you do with this stuff, right? So we have some customers that eat jars at a time, but it's not really meant to be eaten. I mean, unless you have a really robust microbiome, it could really send you for a loop. So it's supposed to be a condiment or a mix-in to a dish. So what we're going to do for the fermentation festival, we make a vegetarian Reuben.
All right, ooh, so we yeah. do. I saw your recipe for that on your yeah. website. I've actually been making vegetarian Reubens all yeah. week.
So these are really good. Roasted beets, right? Really easy to roast beets. You put them, little olive oil, salt, pepper, cover them up in the oven for an hour. Sliced very thinly, roasted portobello mushrooms. And then we make a Thousand Island dressing with our ketchup, the pickle relish, and a little bit of mayonnaise. If you're a vegan, you can use veganese. Put a little rye bread on the griddle, cheese, a Thousand Island dressing, and then the beets and the mushrooms and a little bit of our tiny slaw. It makes a great sandwich. So it all depends on if you want to have just the flavor or if you want to preserve the probiotic benefit. So, you know, if you cook them too long, you're going to kill off the bacteria. You kill off the lactobacillus, which is great for digestion. So what we recommend is if, say you're making fried rice, right? So, you know, there's leftover rice in my refrigerator at home. My wife's home with the kids, and she can take the rice and, you know, heat it up in a saute pan with some vegetables, mix it all together. And then as you're taking it off the stove, you mix in the spicy slaw and toss it in. And it gets warm, but not enough heat to kill off the bacteria. And then you can still get that probiotic benefit with it.
Get more of a contrast of flavor. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you can use it in a mix-in for a salad or for...
I think this would be great in like a salad, salad or like a grain bowl dressing.
Yes,
the sour relish. Yeah.
You're going to do a talk at the Fermentation Festival. What can we expect to see in that? Did we just cover it all in the radio?
Yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about. Some of the things that you can do with these products. We're going to demo the veggie Reuben.
Oh, awesome.
And so we'll have samples of that and talk about, you know, how to protect the benefits of the lactobacillus. And, you know, vegetable-derived lactobacillus is one of the strongest probiotics you can have, natural probiotics. It's much stronger than dairy-derived lactobacillus. It lasts for a lot longer in your gut. It's relatively heat-resistant. It's acid-resistant because it lives in an acidic environment. So it's really good for you. And so we'll talk about ways that you can protect that and bring that into your diet and incorporate it into things you eat in every day.
Now, I had a little question. Bio's mission is sustainability and going with the seasons, as you mentioned. Trying to get Kirby's is, you know, hard when you're trying to make things in season. So we've been talking a lot about fermentation and sustainability lately. We talked about it with Toastdale, and we talked about it a bit with Adam last week. And sometimes it's hard because fermentation sometimes seems to be remotely inherently wasteful. For example, like spent grains when you're making beer. Do you have any advice for anybody trying to make, like, be sustainable at the same time as making ferments at home?
Well, you can ferment almost any kind of vegetable. If you're doing if lacto-fermentation with vegetables, you can ferment almost anything, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a little plot of land and you're growing your own vegetables and you have anything left over, you can make your own mix. Or like our jardinière is a mix of 10 different vegetables, and it could be like whatever's coming up in your garden, right? Or whatever you find in the grocery store. And then the leftovers, the pieces that we don't use in the product, you can make a brine or like a broth out of those. So we ferment those. So that's kind of what happened with the shots, right? So the shots was our leftover product, but now we have to make extra liquid. So, you know, you can take the trimmings, right? So
like your cauliflower.
I was going to say the stem of the cauliflower, right? That you might not want to put in your vegetables, or the outer leaves of the cabbage that might not look so pretty, but they're still good. You can chop those up and ferment those and then use the broth. And the broth is as valuable as the vegetables. I mean, that's where the bacteria is.
Plus, it got me to thinking when you're talking about how you guys do your ketchup and your barbecue sauce and your sauces, like, you could do that with anything left over. Like, we made a bunch of watermelon rind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fermented watermelon rind, and it's delicious, but I never thought about, like, I could put that in a food processor or a blender and make, like,
Pickled watermelon puree.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Use, absolutely.
Which would be pretty cool. So you could do that, I think, with your leftovers as well. Like, if you, you know, just fermented a bunch of broccoli or cauliflower stems or whatever, you know, your little trimmings.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then puree it and make a really nice, cool kind of...
Yeah.
They teach you to make a nuka bed, and to make a nukazuke bed, you use the trimmings to inoculate the scraps to get the bran to a place.
Cool.
Right.
It's cool. Yeah. Where can we find out more information about your product? And you guys
don't have a place to visit, but you guys are in Jersey now.
Right. So we recently moved to Bloomfield, New Jersey in October. And so we have a beautiful facility. It's really clean. It's really comfortable to work in. It's a lot more space. We actually have a parking lot, which is really nice. I know.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And we have a room that we keep heated to do all of the fermentation in. So instead of like wrapping blankets around buckets and things, so we keep one room at 75 degrees all the time. We ferment the kombucha and the vegetables and everything in there. We're happy to have people visit. Awesome. So yeah, you can, So it's a second business called the Organic Food Incubator that is a contract manufacturer for BAO, and it also manufactures four other brands of cultured vegetables and cultured products, as well as like eight different normal hot sauce brands like Shelf Stable and Cold Brew Coffee, and we make a lot of products over there. So I have two businesses.
That's awesome. The organic food?
The organic food incubator.
Incubator.
And that's what you make your BAO food with, and then also
produce
other brand, like contract produce, basically.
Right, exactly.
Cool.
And so, yeah, we're happy to have people visit. You can send us an email at info@organicfoodincubator.com if you want to check that out. And
how many states is BAO in?
I think we're in all of the colonies.
Really?
Yeah, at least.
All of the OG colonies?
Yeah.
Even both Carolinas?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we're in South Carolina. But yeah, I think we are, actually. We're probably in about 20 states.
20?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of information on the website, and if you send us a note, we try really hard to respond. So if you have questions about recipes, or all of our ingredients are listed on the website, so you can just go to the ingredients page. You can see everything we use. We grind our own spices. We do as much as we can to be as sustainable and as transparent as possible. We're certified organic. We get our glass locally.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. We are really excited that you'll be sampling your wares also at the New York City Fermentation Festival giving a seminar.
And what's your...
For BAO?
Yeah, website and other social
media. It's baofoodanddrink.com or at baofoodanddrink for Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Cool.
And if you tag us on anything, we always send you a special coupon. So.
Hey, awesome. All right.
Oh, yeah, and we have... For people that are listening to the show, if they type in their order form, there's a 15% discount.
Hey, all right. Hey, I'm placing an order right now.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Episode 193.
Mm-hmm. And we look forward to seeing you at the fermentation.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Ferment about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.